Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
If you did touch a leper, you would be unclean. And you would have to go through a process of cleansing before you could be restored to access to worship. But Jesus touches the man and he says, "I am willing, be clean." And immediately the leprosy left him. So why does Jesus touch him?
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study in the Gospel of Luke. Join us as Pastor Brian resumes his teaching on Luke chapter 5. Now here's Pastor Brian.
There are some people that God calls away from their nets, calls them to leave their boats, and calls them into a life that is entirely focused upon fishing for people, proclaiming the gospel, doing evangelistic work, doing missions, doing intense discipleship. That happens. Doesn't happen for everybody. And the reason I say this is because sometimes we think that, you know, if I'm really going to serve the Lord, I've just got to leave everything and I've got to go do this. I've got to sign up and I've got to get on the fast track to training for ministry where I can just 24/7, you know, focus on reaching people and discipling people. For some people, yes, absolutely. That happened to me. That happened to many people I know. But it's not what the Lord calls everyone to. There were many disciples. Jesus chose 12 to become fishers of people. The others, they were to remain in their vocations and serve the Lord there. So just know that where you are in life, unless you feel a strong sense, and there's all kinds of things that are indicating this, and there's confirmation that God is calling you away from that to do something like this, then just know that where you're at and what you're doing, that's the place where God has called you to minister. But for Peter, he was fishing for fish, but now he's going to fish for people. And there's a Bible commentator from the previous generation, G. Campbell Morgan. Campbell Morgan, in his biography, he tells a story about how, as God was calling him, he was a teacher. He was an educator, and God called him into a preaching ministry. But he was looking at the call of Peter, which he interpreted as primarily an evangelistic call, primarily a call to go out and to spread the gospel, to take the gospel. And Campbell Morgan said that he didn't feel God had called him to be a fisher of men, but rather to be a teacher of men. And he did. He pastored and taught for many, many years. But the point was, he didn't feel compelled that he needed to go into this whole other thing that he had not been trained for or had not really felt inclined toward, but that rather it was where he had been trained and what his inclinations were, that was the place that God was going to use him. And so I think we all want to be used by the Lord. And most of the time it's going to be right where we are, but there will be those times when the Lord says, "Well, actually, you know, I want to take you and I'm going to pull you out of this, because I've got something entirely new and different for you." That was the case with these men here. And so while Jesus was in one of the towns, a man came along who was covered with leprosy. And when he saw Jesus, he fell with his face to the ground and he begged him, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." So who this man is, we don't know. How he knows that Jesus can make him clean, we don't know. Obviously, the word is spreading about the power of Jesus. Leprosy in the Bible can be anything from a chronic skin, like an eczema or a psoriasis or something like that. It can be anything like that, all the way to something much more serious and ultimately deadly that we know today as Hansen's disease, where the leper was a person who the disease attacked their nerves, their nerve system, and as a result of that, they lost feeling in their extremities, and they would then lose oftentimes their hands or their feet or things because of infection and, you know, different things that happen. And eventually leprosy could even take your life. So when we read leprosy, most of the time, I think we tend to think of it as that extreme case. And in this, it might have been that. But we know from Leviticus that there were various things that a person, if they suspected that they had leprosy, there were various ways that that was diagnosed. The priest was the one who was to be able to identify what was happening. And there were different stages that the priest were to watch the people through. And then there were different points where they would either be pronounced clean and able to just live normally in society, or they were pronounced unclean and they would be excluded. They would be quarantined. They would be set apart from society. So this man, it seems, was probably a person with a more severe case of leprosy. Because when it says that he fell with his face to the ground and begged him, it's the picture of somebody who's keeping his distance from Jesus. And the lepers were required under the law to keep their distance from people. They were to actually inform people as they were out in any kind of public area. They were to inform people out loud that they were unclean. They were to shout to people that they were unclean so that people could clear out. And so it seems like because this man falls on his face, the picture seems to be that he's at a distance from Jesus. He's not approaching him. And he has perhaps cried out that he's unclean. And now he's before the Lord on his face, and he's asking if Jesus would cleanse him. And if you think about all of those things, I was reading Leviticus today, and I was reading about the quarantine, and you think, wow, that must have been, in so many ways, it must have been such a painful thing, not just the physical element of it, but the emotional exclusion from all relationships. Of course, you could relate to other lepers, and they would in those days, and even in modern times, have leper colonies where people with afflicted with the serious form of leprosy would live together. But your family, your loved ones, the people you had been closest to, those were the people that you were cut off from. And it seems harsh and cruel, but of course, if you think about it, even in terms of what we experienced with COVID, you know, just think about that whole thing where people were not allowed to have, you know, we had to have 6 feet of distance between us, right? and you couldn't touch and you couldn't hug and you couldn't, in some cases and in some places, you couldn't go into the home of your loved ones. And of course, we know in extreme situations, people died in hospitals without ever being able to be contacted by their relatives because they couldn't have access to them. So we get, even by our own experience now, which we had never had prior to that, we get a little bit more of an idea of what the ostracization of the person might have been like. And you also get a little bit of the idea about some of the really crazy, irate people when it came to COVID who, you know, if you got anywhere near them, they were freaking out and they were upset. I remember standing in the mall one day and there was a guy that was working at a store that I was trying to buy something at. And, you know, he called my name. I had to come up to him. And I walked up and he's like, "Hey, get back." Like, "Well, you just said come up." "Yeah, but, you know, you're not 6 feet away." And I didn't like that. I thought, what is the matter with this guy? You need to chill, friend. It's, you know. But, I mean, that's how people can get easily with stuff like that. So imagine what it was like for the leper. And to add insult to injury, the religious leaders, the Pharisees had a mentality that if you were afflicted in any way, it was some sort of an indication that you were being punished by God. And especially with leprosy, because leprosy, it almost seemed like it was a type of sin. So did you know some of the rabbinical literature you can read where the religious leaders told the people that if they saw lepers coming, not only were they to get as far away from them as they could, but if necessary, they were to throw rocks at them. They were to shout and scream. They were to do everything to keep them as far away as possible. So all that to say, can you imagine what this psychologically did to a person? This would have been beyond the mere physical aspects of it. It would have been psychologically devastating. And so this man, on his face, "Lord, if you're willing, you can make me clean." And here's the radical thing. Jesus reached out his hand and touched him. That was not to be done. You were not to touch a leper. And if you did touch a leper, you would be unclean. And you would have to go through a process of cleansing before you could be restored to access to worship. But Jesus touches the man and he says, "I am willing, be clean." And immediately the leprosy left him. So why does Jesus touch him? I think because Jesus knew that this man needs to be touched. Jesus knew that there was more than just the physical issue here, that there was a deep emotional component in this man's cry, and he needed to be touched. Because, of course, Jesus could have not touched him. Jesus, on some occasions, didn't touch anybody. He just spoke a word, and people were healed. But I think the fact that he does touch him is, it just reminds us of how God knows what we need from him. And he knows that sometimes what we need is not just maybe even a physical touch, but we need something deeper than that. We need something that will emotionally minister to us, that will bring us a sense of somebody actually does love me and care for me. And I think Jesus probably touched him too as a rebuke to the hardness of heart of the religious leaders of the time. because they would have just as soon stoned a person who got this close to them. But Jesus sets this beautiful example. And of course, with Jesus, when he touches him, the leprosy disappears. So Jesus here is, I mean, could they have accused him of violating the law because he touched a leper? It would have been a little hard because, well, he's not a leper now. So, well, he was a leper, but then I touched him and now he's not. So I guess he would have left them to figure that one out. Then Jesus ordered him, "Don't tell anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing." So if you want to read about this in Leviticus 13, you can read all about the different sacrifices. But Jesus sends him to the priest to offer the sacrifice that Moses commanded, and he says, as a testimony to them. So Jesus here, remember, one of the things that they're going to accuse Jesus of is violating the law. They try to pit Jesus against Moses. So Jesus, when he heals the person, he says, now go to the priest and let them inspect you and let them pronounce you clean. And this will be a testimony to them. What is the testimony? The testimony is that here is a person who has been healed from an incurable disease, and he's been healed by the touch of this man, Jesus. So this would have been a further proof, as Jesus is putting forth these many infallible proofs of his claim to be the Messiah. And so the news about him spread all the more, so that crowds of people came to hear him and to be healed of their sicknesses. Crowds of people came. Now, you know, we live in an age where we have had so much advance in understanding disease and treatment of disease and all of this. And, you know, I think for us, it's hard to comprehend what things would look like. I mean, you can see it today. You can go to places where they don't have access to the things that we do today. You can find people who are afflicted with all different types of things. As a matter of fact, a friend of mine, Lou Wing, I was having lunch with him the other day, and Lou's a scientist, and he had done many, many trips to China as a consultant in his particular field, but as a minister of the gospel, he would also go on all of his trips to China. He would always fit in some time where he was going to be involved in some ministry, and he was telling me about he went to this particular city, and there are a group of people in this city who have a tumor in their retina. And this happens, and for some reason, in this group of people, it was like a genetic thing, but in this group of people, there's a tumor that develops in their retina, and if untreated, it will kill you ultimately, but it can be treated even when it's gotten pretty severe. And he was saying that the tumor can become so large that the person's eye actually protrudes out and droops down onto their face. And he was saying how the problem there is, first of all, they didn't really want to take the time to consider that it could be treated. They just oftentimes would leave people like that. And then even as Lou went in with his medical expertise and his scientific expertise and told them, look, this is treatable, this is curable, this is how you do it, and finally convincing some doctors that this was something that could have been taken care of, he said the problem at that point was the doctors just simply didn't care. They didn't want to do it. But anyway, he's just telling me about this whole community with where these people are afflicted with this. So this is the world that Jesus was in. There was no treatment for most of everything that we know as any kind of sickness. So these people that are coming to him, they're coming to him, and outside of him, there's no possibility for any remedy to their situation. But as they come to him, he touches them and he heals them. But then verse 16, and this is a key to all of this, but Jesus often withdrew to a wilderness, a barren area, it says here, lonely places. He often withdrew and he prayed. Jesus, we see this, I mentioned this before, Luke focuses on the humanity of Jesus more than the other writers, in the sense that he highlights it. And one of the ways he highlights it is by mentioning the prayer life of Jesus more than the other gospel writers. And I think the reason Luke does that is he's wanting us to see that Jesus, yes, he's the Lord, yes, he's divine, but he's not operating out of his divinity. He is operating as a man depending on God, just like we do. And so the reason I think why Luke is always pointing out that Jesus is praying is to show us that we are in need of what only prayer can give. We're in need of power that we don't have. We're in need of strength that we don't have. If we're going to effectively engage in the work of the Lord, we have to do the same thing. And I think the emphasis here is on the word often. Jesus often. And I think also there's the point of the solitude. So Jesus is getting away into a solitary place, and he's doing it often. Man, it's not easy to do that in our world today, is it? It's not easy to do that. It's not easy to get away to a solitary place. It's hard to, you know, our schedules and all of that sort of works against us doing that. But then even when we decide we're going to make it happen, we're going to take the time, we can still be so easily distracted. And we all know what I'm talking about, right? Do I need to say anything else? We carry our distraction with us in our pocket.
For the month of November, Back to Basics Radio is offering a book titled, Is Christmas Unbelievable? 4 questions everyone should ask about the world's most famous story by Rebecca McLaughlin. It's easy for the holiday season to draw our attention to shopping, parties, programs, and events, while the Christmas story is relegated to the status of a myth or fairy tale for children. But is the Christmas story actually grounded in history? Well, in her book, Is Christmas Unbelievable? 4 questions everyone should ask about the world's most famous story, Rebecca McLaughlin tackles 4 basic questions surrounding Christmas. She deals with questions surrounding if Jesus was a historical figure, if we can take seriously the historical accounts of the gospel, if the virgin birth can really be believed, and why it all matters. If you know a person who is skeptical that the Christmas story is true, or if you are a skeptic yourself, we encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443 or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com to order Is Christmas Unbelievable? 4 questions everyone should ask about the world's most famous story by Rebecca McLaughlin. And when you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you this book as our way to say thank you. We do appreciate your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue next time with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the Gospel of Luke. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.